Welcome back to Right on Four Corners. I'm your host, Delshree Gladden. On this week's episode, I have Grant Faulkner with us, and he's going to be talking about his newest book out through UNM Press called The Art of Brevity. Grant, go ahead and introduce yourself.
I am fundamentally and primarily a writer, and I always joke that I've written everything except for a vacuum cleaner manual. And the second part of that joke is I expect to write a vacuum cleaner manual someday in my life. I'm executive director of National Novel Writing Month. That's my day job. If you're not familiar with that, it's a basic challenge to write 50,000 words in the month of November. And we believe that the goal and the deadline is a creative midwife. And National Novel Writing Month, I always describe it as two things. It's one part writing boot camp, because you learn the discipline of showing up every day and writing 1,700 words approximately every day. But it's one part writing party. And that's because there's this big rollicking community around you, whether online or in person, who's supporting and encouraging you on. When I'm writing long, messy novels, which I love to write and read, but I also love these short, little, neat pieces. I started writing 100-word stories. Gosh, I think it was way back in 2009 where I was introduced to the form. And my one warning to people is that it's a highly addictive form. And I was working on a long, long, long novel at the time. And I just took a break from the novel to write these little pieces. And they provided this immense relief from writing the novel because, for one, I could actually complete something. And so I had this sense of satisfaction in completing it. And then I could actually, you know, send them out to be published. And so if they got published, they gave me this wonderful creative fuel that I brought back to the novel and brought back to these short pieces. But one thing led to another, and I founded a 100-word story magazine with a friend of mine, and that's been going since 2011. And then I also ended up publishing a book, a collection of 100-word stories called Fissures, and there are 100-word stories in that. Just love the flash fiction form, and I look forward to talking with you more about it. And then it all led to writing The Art of Brevity, because I love thinking about aesthetics, and especially the aesthetics of this very peculiar little form, these little tiny stories.
And I have to say, like, I tend to be a long writing person. I write novels. Most of my novels are longer than usual. Short form writing has been hard, and I worked as a journalist for a while, and mostly just on the editing side now. And that was something that was like really hard for me, going from novels to journalism. And as I was reading The Art of Brevity, it was like, oh my gosh, okay, this is a new challenge, because, you know, I got into a place where I could write, you know, 600 to 800 words for a news article. That was really challenging at first, trying to think of whittling that down to 100 words. It's going to take a lot of practice.
It does take a lot of practice. You know, when I first started writing, well, two stories. One is that when I first started writing these, I didn't get anywhere close to 100 words. And the person who inspired me to write them, his name is Paul Strom, and he wrote this collection of 100-word stories as a memoir called Sport and Jack. And that's what introduced me to the form. And he's the father of a good friend of mine. And I told him, yeah, I've been writing short stuff just like you. And, you know, I've gotten some stories down to as few as 150 words. And he was like, no, you've got to get them down to exactly 100 words, and they will be better stories once you do. And it's not like 100 is a magical number. Stories could have been 97 words or 102 words. The thing is the process to get them down to 100 words, and it does take practice. Like you said, I practiced a lot in order to get them down to 100 words, and to still have them be a complete story, you know, a story mm-hmm. with a beginning, middle, and end, with a character conflict and change. And really learning how to write with a sense of, you know, the text that's on the page, but also the story that's not on the page, you know, writing with the art of omission. And also learning about how a constraint holds creative possibilities, ironically, right? Because we usually think that constraints are like a negative thing, but they can be a very positive thing for your writing. The other story is that when we started 100 Word Story, we invited a bunch of our friends who were well-published authors to contribute. And so many of them wrote back, I can't do this. And, you know, they were novelists. The thing is that when we come up as writers, most of us are trained to write longer and longer and longer. Like when a research paper is assigned in high school, most kids, their first question is, how long does it have to be? And then if it has to be 10 pages, most of the kids end up padding, writing long sentences, putting in extra adjectives, writing stuff that doesn't really need to be there. So we're taught to write to excess in a lot of ways. And that goes throughout college, and especially if you pursue academics, you know, the, like PhD dissertations are full of jargon, full of things that maybe don't need to be there. And so succinctness and writing for brevity and writing for the essence is rarely taught, rarely practiced, but yet it is really the heart of the best writing.
It really is. I mean, I think that you mentioned early on in the book that writing a novel doesn't have to be a writing goal for everybody. Like, that's not necessarily like the end all be all for someone who says, I'm a writer, I've got to write a novel. And some of the examples you gave throughout the book, really stuck with me, because this is not my skill in writing. Really like to try some shorter stuff to get me going, like you said, to have some sense of having completed something. But I really liked that perspective of, it doesn't have to be a novel for someone to say, I'm a writer or I write. It can be 100 words, and it can be a complete wonderful thing that has an impact on someone.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, especially when you're coming up as a writer like I did. I say that by, you know, when I graduated from college, my plan A and my plan B and my plan C was to be a writer. So I started, you know, kind of training myself and then looking for opportunities for classes and stuff like that and reading. But then, you know, once I started an MFA program, MFA program is really all, I would say, you know, they focus on the short story. The short story is kind of like the minor leagues of writing. It's like you go through that training ground in order to get to the novel, and the novel is the big leagues. And that's fine. Like I said earlier, I like big, messy novels. I like all types of novels. But we kind of really have this arc of what's considered a success generally as a writer. And I don't think it necessarily, you have to follow that arc. In some ways, it's a very American thing to think that bigger is always better. And I think that instead of viewing the short story as the minor leagues or the training ground for the big leagues, I think it's like a wonderful art form unto itself. And especially the shorter stuff, like when I say short story, I'm talking about more conventional length short stories, which are like 15 to 20 pages. And then flash fiction, which Art of Brevity is about, is stories traditionally defined as 1,000 words or less. And then microfiction is 400 words or less. So there are all these kind of layers within the flash fiction kind of form. I think that, you know, it's just such an interesting and challenging aesthetic. As you said, it's harder to write short in many ways than it is to write long. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite quotes is Mark Twain, who said, I would have written it shorter if only I'd had more time. It's a very demanding form, and by doing it, I think it just teaches you so much about writing. It makes you think so much about the way your sentences are constructed, the way that the juxtaposition of the sentences, you know, one sentence up against another, how that works. It really becomes a type of poetry. It really teaches a type of lyricism that sometimes longer writing doesn't.
Yeah, you know, that was something that struck me, especially doing this show. I've had a chance to talk with and interact with more poets, which was not something I've had the opportunity to do very much. And it struck me the way so many of them talked about, you know, how much focus they put into their word choice and arrangement. Mm-hmm. And those conversations were brought back to mind reading this and seeing some of the examples of, you mentioned a lot, like white space and how they're put together. And that really made me think a lot about some of those comments of how much that can apply to this, of thinking what you're leaving out, what the reader can infer, what they can build in their mind with only 100 words, with these few glimpses and these few sentences. And so many of the examples that you use, like, really do build this whole story, this whole, even a visual image. And like, you really get a sense of what's going on in just a few words. And that was just a really neat thing for me reading this book. So like I said, it's not my background. I haven't done a lot of short or flash fiction writing. But it really made me want to put a little bit more focus into that and give it a try. And especially since I've had a hard time finding time and then actually like getting in the mindset to write. This is a wonderful approach to getting your mind focused in a creative way, but not feeling I've got to write 100,000 words here.
Exactly. I mean, such an accessible form. right? Like almost anybody can write 100 words or 500 words or 1,000 words. It doesn't technically take a long time to do that. And actually, that's one benefit I left out earlier when I was talking about my initial discovery of it. Like my kids were actually pretty young when I found out about 100-word stories. And one of the reasons the form creatively nourished me so much is that I could fit it into my life. My life was full of this time confetti, and there might be 5 minutes here or 10 minutes there or 15 minutes somewhere else. Sometimes I would literally sit and write a little story while I was at a kid's soccer game. And so it's accessible in a marvelous way, and it allowed me to kind of keep my creative momentum in a time of life or an era when I was getting kind of frustrated by not having more time to write the big novel that I wanted to write. And, you know, on that note, I'm going to put this out there because I know that you just started teaching ninth grade English, and a good friend of mine is coming out with a book on teaching 100-word stories, and she's a high school teacher. She loves the form because she can project them onto a screen and you can see the whole story at once. And so she can talk about those elements that you just talked about, like word choice and arrangement, and you can see the trajectory of a story or the way an image operates in a story. And the kids, because they're so accessible, they actually get really excited by them for the same reason I got excited by them. They can complete the story. They can read it really easily and share it really easily. They can analyze it again, like all together, looking at the story instead of paging through 15, 20, 30 pages. And that book's coming out, sorry, to give it a plug, in November. So I'll let you know about it so you can try it out with your ninth graders.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, I've been trying to come up with good, like, getting class started or when we have extra time at the end of class, something fun that's not just like, okay, read some more, you know, words you don't know and define them or something like that. That could be a really fun, here's more homework type of thing that I could do with them and maybe spark a little interest.
Yeah, and again, like it is the accessibility of the form. It's a very inviting form. I think the more challenging part of it is my friend Molly Giles, who's this fantastic writer, she says, you know, it can take 15 minutes to write one of these stories, but it takes a year to perfect them. And it doesn't always take a year, but it does take a lot of rewriting. And so I think the form, for me, I think of it more as editing than writing because I'm constantly revising to find that perfect balance of word choice and arrangement, as you said. And that's also good for your students, though, because it's a way, because the story is so condensed, I think they can visualize and think about how to edit writing in a different way than they might a long piece.
Yeah. And that editing, that is such a different skill in...
Mm-hmm.
I think it really impresses, like, I've learned so much about writing through editing from working with editors or editing other people's stuff. Like, it really brings it back to your mind of the words need to count. They need to matter. If they're on the page, they're there for a reason. What's the reason?
Right. We're always making choices, and editing takes you deeper in the subject matter because you're noticing the nuances and the shadings and the counterpoints. And it's really where your critical thinking skills come out because you are making tough choices. And sometimes you're existing in a state of uncomfortableness or discomfort. And that's the discomfort of challenging thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the other things that I wanted to ask you about, or I guess just talk about, you made a comment on one of the earlier chapters about how small things can open up big spaces. And that was another one that like really stuck with me because when I'm thinking of ideas or something comes in, my mind automatically goes to, okay, how do I build this into a novel? Is there enough there for me to make it through so many pages? And can I hold someone's interest? That's my autopilot of creative writing. And I really loved that this focused so much on it doesn't have to be more than what it is. It can be that one moment and you can tell that story of what's happening right there. And that can be all of it. And I loved that.
I think we really live life in the intensity of moments. And when I first read that Paul Strom's Sport and Jack, the 100-word memoirs he made into his life story, I thought about how our lives really are full of these disjointed moments. They're not necessarily connected to something larger, but they're intense and they're stories of themselves. And sometimes there's not even a place to tell that story. But because the short form exists, I guess if I'm going to think about my own memory of my own life, it becomes like a collage of all these different snapshots of life. And I think a snapshot is really the perfect metaphor for these tiny stories. And so that's one reason I find them so inviting is that, like you said, I don't have to think of them as being this big, long story that might not ever get written. I can just capture that snapshot unto itself, and that snapshot can be very meaningful, especially when it's linked to other kinds of snapshots. You can construct a fiction story that way, but also it can operate like a type of memoir or slice of life.
Well, and you mentioned, too, how readers read and how they interact with the story, that in the same way, it's often in those fragments that they read and they, you know, there's a scene and they focus on that scene and feel it and get involved with the characters. And then even a longer piece, and maybe there's some exposition, some time to reflect, and then you get to the next moment, and then that's the focus. And I liked that way of looking at it.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it occurred to me, I was like, what do I carry with me from a novel? If I think of Anna Karenina or Crime and Punishment, two pretty big novels, or The Great Gatsby or Catcher in the Rye, you know, two shorter novels, my memory of them is very impressionistic. And I think they're both, all of those books are equally as large in my mind. And it's because of that impressionistic quality and the fragments that I take from them. And so I don't think the size of a story necessarily is equivalent to its bigness. And that's to say that, like, in a smaller space or a smaller story, it can be big. You can, like, capture that exact bigness that a big novel might have. I did dedicate a chapter in The Art of Brevity to this. I used Borges as the example. And Borges, like, at one point in his life, he was like, well, I'm not going to get the opportunity to write the novels that I want to write. And so that was a moment of creative frustration, but he said, I'll find another way to write them. I'll find them, you know, in inventive, shorter spaces. So, like, instead of writing a novel like Don Quixote, he wrote a book review of the novel Don Quixote, you know, or he'd write a book review about the novel he wanted to write. And that was a way of capturing the bigness of the novel, was just in a two-page book review. And so I think that's what you can do with flash fiction. You can find a way to reach that bigness, but do it in a small, different space.
I really like that way of looking at it and that perspective of just, it feels like as a writer, you know, I think you touch on this later in the book of the traditional sense of writing and the arc and the conventions that go along with, you know, your beginning creative writing class. And this is how you do it and follow
right.
These instructions and how much that, yeah, it provides a foundation. I think it's a good starting place, but having that flexibility as a writer and in your own creativity to have an idea, to find some inspiration, and then to look at it and say, does this need to be this or that or the other? Can it just be what it is right there? And it's just one of those things that I think we don't talk about in, like, the academic side of creative writing very much. It's a lot more of learning those rules, which are important, but I like this approach and the way you talked about it of so much of what else is available to a writer and opening up those avenues and ideas and exploring different types and different ways of displaying the story that you want to tell. And I wanted to ask you a little bit kind of the different things that you talk about with the different ways of looking at it with the white space or the visual presentation of something and how much that also impacts how the story is told and how the reader receives it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, like what you were saying, is that we do have a kind of conventional definition of what a story is and what our expectations are with Western storytelling, Western in particular, because we do think of every story of having three acts, essentially, a beginning, a middle, and an end, and to have a character have a conflict or a desire and to meet the obstacles to that desire. And, you know, that is like one type of storytelling, and it's many wonderful stories fit into that framework, but it's not the only one. And I think it can be really limiting, especially since we have so many different writing programs and writing classes these days. It becomes very burdensome. You know, people teach that as the kind of single story form, and it's not the single story form. And I think these shorter pieces, slash fiction, open up the question of what is a story and what do we expect of a story? Because you can do so many different things in such a small space. And in some ways, it's liberating because, you know, you don't have to have as much dramatic tension or narrative pressure on a story to make it interesting, because I think it can also work in that realm of the lyricism of a poem, for instance. And not a lot has to happen in the course of 100 words or 500 words. It's liberating to me in that respect. And I do think that a story form, it is a type of existential position. It's a lens that you're looking at the world through. the shorter forms allow you to look at the world through different lenses and see different stories. And that's what I really enjoy about them, is that I can redefine what my expectations of a story are.
That was one of the things. There's a lot of things that stuck with me while reading this. I feel like I keep saying that. But one of them was, yeah, that shift in perspective and looking at things a little bit differently. It's so funny. I work with a lot of authors and you hear their conversations and their frustrations and things. And with novelists, I think especially, have this view of, okay, you're going to write this thing, you're going to complete it, and then you're going to do something with it. You're going to find an agent, you're going to seek out a publisher, you're going to self-publish, you're going to go some route. And not that you can't do anything with shorter fiction, because you obviously can, but one of the things that was really something that stuck out to me with a lot of what you were talking about was that I didn't feel that pressure of, okay, I'm going to write this flash fiction, and then what do I do with it?
Mm.
And like that liberating sense like you talked about, and just like that different perspective shift of, I'm creating something, and that can be that.
Yeah. I think every writer, every creator should remind themselves that creativity for creativity's sake is a really good thing. And that's why we're in it in the first place, you know, to, mm-hmm. I mean, it's good to remind ourselves of like when we sat down as kids to write stories, we did it for our own entertainment and our own nourishment. And we did it kind of like without thinking of anything else, not even who we were going to show it to. I mean, I remember writing stories. I never even thought about showing them to anybody. They were just for me. And I do think that sometimes money, fame, glory, movie deals, whatever it is, really warp the creative process and really warp the artist, because once that becomes a possibility, it changes how you even execute that writing. Mm-hmm. And because sometimes you're thinking more of the market than you are your own soul, you know, and I think it's important to think of your own soul when you write. And I've largely or almost entirely written not with any I don't write with any expectation of really making any money off of anything or having any fame or glory attached to it. And I think what you're talking about with flash fiction is that no one has made a great movie off a tiny story, I don't think. No one that I know has made much money off of their flash fiction. You know, it's not to say, like you said, you can publish it, but I just think that there's a little bit of a different ambition involved. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more like poetry, because most poets don't count on widely recognized either. There are a few who make it through, but it's not like why you do it. And if it is, then you've kind of chosen the wrong thing, I think. So I think that is liberating, and liberating is the right word. And that's what I love about it, is that, yeah, I can write a story for its story's sake. And I've got a bunch of stories in my little folder of flash fiction that I've written, and some I'll come back to and I'll revise and I'll try to publish them. But some of them I just toyed around with for a while. So they were just fine on that level, just enjoying that first draft of them.
I like that. That's something that as I was reading, I think writers of any persuasion and interest and skill level could really, really benefit from reading this, because there is a lot of craft in it of how to do it, but there's also a lot of just reassurance of it's okay to just write and to be creative and express yourself. And that's the end goal, to write something and to enjoy it and to share something of yourself with, even if it's just with yourself, that's still, that self-exploration is so important. And I was reading through it, I really couldn't think of any writer that I wouldn't recommend taking a look at this, because I think it can help no matter what type of writing you're interested in. I really enjoyed it and found a lot of helpful tips, but also just helpful perspective shifts. And yeah, I would just really recommend it to a lot of writers. I think there's a lot to be learned from taking a different approach to what you're writing.
Well, thank you so much for saying that, because I really do. That's what I want. That's the message I want to convey in anything I do, is not to exclude people or prohibit them from writing the form. But it is that exactly what you said, that writing as a tool of exploration, I mean, it needs no other reason to exist. You're exploring yourself, you're exploring human relations, you're exploring the world of nature, you're exploring the world of the universe, you know, and beyond. And you can explore fantasy things too, which reflect back on us in life. And so I think it's all, our stories are all about a connection and connecting us to so many different things. You know, so often people view writing as this forbidding thing that they're not good at or they can't do. But our very essence as human beings is that we're storytellers, right? That's how we make meaning of our existence is through the stories we tell. And so, yeah, I always hope that people, anything that I write, I hope it's an invitation for others to write.
Love that. Not to get too sidetracked off of the book, but with National Novel Writing Month, I can't talk today. That's something with that, like, I always felt that open invitation. It's been a few years since I've participated just because my schedule hasn't really given me enough time. But it's such a great opportunity to just, like you said, focus in and set some goals for yourself. And you don't necessarily have to come up with this masterpiece during NaNoWriMo. I have several that I've worked on over the years that, you know, are still in a folder and I'll never do anything with. And a couple of my nano projects that have turned into full things and been published. And one of the things I always enjoyed about participating in that was that I could just write. And like, I was setting goals for myself, but it was the process that was important. And it was fun and it was community. And I really enjoyed that about that program. And I saw some of that in The Art of Brevity as well, of just enjoying it.
Cool. Well, I was going to say, I've got a suggestion for how you can do NaNoWriMo this fall. Do you want to hear it?
Yes.
This is for anybody who's out there, but especially for ninth grade English teachers. So we have this program called the Young Writers Program, and it's a version of NaNoWriMo for kids and teens and teachers. And so we have a whole Common Core aligned curriculum. We have free workbooks, and we have a whole website dedicated with a writing platform. And so we have about 100,000 kids and teens participate every year in about 10,000 classrooms.
Oh, wow.
And it's a really wonderful way to teach writing. And the reason is because kids, they rarely get to choose what they want to write about in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And they get to choose their story, and they get to choose a fun story, and they get to leap into their imagination. And they don't have to worry too much about, like, you know, the organization of paragraphs or grammar. It's just about writing and finding the joy of writing and the meaning of writing. And I always say that the best kind of teaching pedagogy centers itself in joy. And mm-hmm. so when kids are having fun doing something and having meaning and purpose in doing something, then they're going to be all the more interested in learning things like grammar and attention to word and word choice and vocabulary, all those things that are more about the mechanics of writing. So anyway, and the beauty of this for you is that you can sit beside your students and write a novel with them. And you can share your own struggles and your own breakthroughs and your own joys, and you can share your story. I've actually known NaNoWriMo teachers who've ended up publishing the novel that they wrote with their kids in the classroom. So not that that's
awesome.
The end goal, but it's a cool thing. And I think, like, teachers writing with kids is a fabulous way to teach them, because they see you going through the same things that they're going through. And it kind of validates the experience, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Okay, I'm going to be researching that this weekend.
Cool.
Seeing how I can use it. I would love to implement that.
I hope you do.
And I could probably sit here and talk to you about this for a couple more hours, but I do need to wrap up.
Thank you, Delsree.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind listeners that the book is called The Art of Brevity by Grant Faulkner, and that's through UNM Press and available most other places that I saw when I looked around. And where can people find you and keep an eye on what you're up to, Grant?
Yeah, everything's pretty literal with me. I'm Grant Faulkner, @GrantFaulkner, on all the social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. I cherish when people follow me. And I've got a free weekly newsletter called Intimations, A Writer's Discourse. And you can find that on Substack. And again, just Google Grant Faulkner newsletter, Substack. And I also have a podcast called Right Minded, and I do that with my co-host, Brooke Warner, and it comes through NaNoWriMo and Brooke's She Writes Press, and it's weekly, and you can find that on Spotify and iTunes and you know, anywhere where you listen to podcasts. And, yeah, I think those are the main things. 100 Word Story is 100wordstory.org, and then NaNoWriMo is NaNoWriMo.org. And, I hope your listeners write anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me tonight. And I'm really glad I got the opportunity to check out your book and share it with our listeners.
Well, thank you, Delsree. Those were fantastic questions. And I appreciated the thoughtfulness that you read the book